Hi, everybody, and welcome to a Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. On tonight's episode, I decided to go with a little bit of a business casual look. So I took a garbage bag, I tried to cut it into a suit jacket, it didn't work. So then I bought a suit jacket from a Ross, it is pink, and then I decided to put a nice white skirt with it because it made me feel fancy. But I am wearing slippers. So on today's episode, I wanted to go over the national conversation that we've been having about drag queens being the problem, drag queens not being appropriate for children, drag queens apparently being the scourge of the earth. And in reality, we all know what they're attacking. We all know what they're going over. And the fact is, they're trying to attack trans people through drag artists. And actually, well, here's the thing. I actually think some people are actually just joining the bandwagon, really thinking that drag queens or drag artists are like a crime. And or at least like a freak of nature, or however you want to say it. And they don't want that around their children. And the thing is, we all know this. Some drag shows are all ages and some drag shows are 21 plus. And I do think that the other side probably understands that. So let's play devil's advocate and actually give some validity to their argument. Let's say that you think that all ages drag show, even if the person's just dressing like Cinderella, the drag artist dressing like Cinderella, is inappropriate for children, because then you have to have difficult conversations that you don't necessarily want to have. I was told this a long time ago. I did a stand-up comedy set in front of children, and the reason it got a lot of criticism is because parents didn't want to have those conversations with kids because they didn't know how to have those conversations with their children about gender, sexual orientation, and XYZ. But the thing I want to say to everybody out there is, when it comes to like a drag queen story hour or an all ages brunch or an all ages event, you don't have to have difficult conversations with your kids about gender. I mean, and if they do ask, all you have to say is, this person is playing dress up for entertainment. It doesn't necessarily have to be that, oh yeah, this person is that or this person is this, because drag is a lot about entertainment. Now, and if you want to dive deep and to have those difficult conversations with your children about gender, and they have questions like, what's wrong with exploring that? Unless you're one of those people that think, you know, somebody feeling like they were born into the wrong body is an illness, because it's not. And even so, what's really hurtful about this conversation is that we're blocking the ability to kids to explore. We're blocking the ability for kids to understand a little bit more about gender in general. We're blocking kids from just expanding their worldview. And I don't think there's anything wrong with expanding the worldview of a child. And a lot of people say, I think they're too young to know about sexual orientation. I feel like they're too young to know about gender identities. It's like they know about gender identities because gender is a societal construct. And so when they go to school or they see their mommy or their daddy or their brothers or their sisters or their siblings or whatever in between, like they already understand gender to a degree, because the second that they have understanding of the world, they understand that there are people that look different. And they're being told that, oh yeah, the girls do this, the boys do that. Like, kids are already learning that from a very early age. And if we start deconstructing what that actually means, and I even can mean it in the ways from when I was growing up, because I'm in my 30s. And like, you know, the little girl would be wearing jeans, right? And she would have short hair and she was a tomboy. Automatically, she was a tomboy. There was no other way around it. She was just a tomboy. And if a boy had long hair, like, he was more feminine. Like, he had to be more feminine. There was no other way around it. And it seems like these ideals have now, like, also progressed into today's world in a really toxic way, to where it's like, oh, well, you know, we can't have a conversation about gender, because it means that we actually have to define what gender is to people. Like, people, like, walk like a man, talk like a man, stand like a man. What does that even mean? And I don't even mean that in like the rhetorical way. I really want an answer. Like, what does that mean? And I'm not trying to fool anybody into saying the wrong thing or the right thing. But when you're putting these requirements around the conversations of gender, it hurts the conversation of gender, because you'll find out that there really isn't an answer. Because some of the people who have the most positive masculine energy will do things that seem feminine, are traditionally known to to be feminine. And if you break apart these ideals of gender, you'll understand that, hey, like your kid might be really interested in a profession or has a passion for a profession that is mostly known to have a women in the profession or men in the profession. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if we really say that we are equals, then what's wrong with having your kids explore something, especially when we all know that kids are exploring a bunch of different things. Now, let's also talk about the conversation of because I accidentally ended up on transphobic social media for like a day, and it was horrible, some of the stuff that these people were saying. I will say that they usually say that, you know, it's a mental illness, blah, 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 which is completely wrong. However, they were talking about gender reassignment surgery and hormone therapy for kids, or you know, having your kids in therapy and for figuring out who they are as a person. And people were up in arms about that. They're like, oh my gosh, because you know their brains aren't even formed. That's the argument. The brains aren't formed yet. The brains aren't formed yet. The brains aren't formed yet. And even if it is reversible, their brains aren't formed yet. And the thing is, it's okay to let your children explore. And I do mean this, just explore. Like, you don't necessarily even have to do all of the things like therapy. Those, when we talk about that, especially in progressive communities, about like gender reassignment surgery and hormone therapy or things like that, it's because they're definitives for that child in that moment. Like, and I know somebody be like, well, my child wanted to play piano today and they were dead set on it. And I bought a piano and they started playing piano. And then 2 weeks later, they forgot about the piano and they never touched it again. The thing is, the parents who are putting their kids in these situations to have a better life, to love themselves, to be comfortable in the bodies that they have, it's not because it goes away in a couple of weeks. They're not like immediately, your kid's like, I think I'm a girl. And then they go and have gender reassignment surgery. That's not what's happening. And that's what people think is actually happening. Like, they're like, or they think immediately, they're like, oh my gosh, like they've been, now they're like on hormone blockers and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's not what happens. Usually what happens is it's a pattern. You see your kid being unhappy, or you see your kid acting in a specific way that doesn't fit with the gender ideals that have been placed upon them, and they're breaking out of those. And then the parents, what they're doing is they're letting their kid naturally decide who they are and pick who they are and be loved for who they are. So when we talk about the conversation of gender, don't think this is one of those things of where we are mutilating bodies, or we're abusing children because we put them in therapy, or we are making the wrong choice because we are letting folks explore a different side of themselves that is outside of the norm. And to be fair, and how I kind of want to end this set, is the norm is a problematic convention in every sense of the word, almost, when it comes to people. We have built a society about what the norms are when it comes to people, so much so that we alienate free thinkers and we alienate people from being happy in their own skin. We alienate people from being able to even explore what makes them happy in their own skin. And that kind of society is troublesome. That kind of society is hurtful and harmful. That kind of society is what creates so many mental health issues to begin with. Because if you're not even allowed to ask the question, I don't think I'm a boy, before getting abused and hurt and having horrible terms flung your way, then why would anybody want to ever ask the question? Unless that's your goal, then your goal is to suppress people before they even have the ability to see forward. And that's not the kind of society I think most of us want to live in. I understand that this was a difficult topic, listeners, but how are you doing? Hey, everybody. You know sometimes how you get really bored on a Tuesday? Well, I have something for you. We just started up a weekly bingo show at North Bar PDX. It's located at 5008 Southeast Division Street. It starts at 7 o'clock p.m. It's hosted by Carly J. Phoenix, Autumn Rains and Coco Jump Holiday. It is free to play for the first round for everybody. After that, we do kind of charge for the cards, just so we can get a little bit of money. And also, the bar has the coolest vibe. The bartenders are so cool, so funny, so sweet, and everything you want on an easy-to-have Tuesday. It usually runs from 7 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. And hey, it's bingo. Everybody should know how to play. And remember, it's five squares for a bingo. More information, check it out on our website at agemofasecretpodcast.com. Just click at the events section and you can see all of the events that the CDS Drag Productions has to offer.
It's a podcast.
Check it out.
All right, everybody, welcome back to A Gem of a Secret Podcast. I do have a special guest with me here today. I have Clinica DePrecious.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I was sitting in and listening to the entire conversation you're having beforehand, before the break. Those are some really strange opinions.
I know. It's really odd.
Do you really
odd.
Feel that comfortable putting them out there?
Yes. Yes, I do.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really, 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 really great. I'm super excited. I finally got to meet you. I've been following you online very minimally. And...
Thank you. Oh my God, it's been great getting to meet you too.
Yeah, seriously. So at the time of filming this, we are at the Austin International Drag Festival. Mm-hmm. And Clinica is the winner of season 4 of Camp Wanakiki.
Wow. I throw in the laugh track.
I know. It's like, No, it's great. It's so great. And I'm really excited that we get to like hang out and just talk for a little bit.
Yeah, for real, for real.
So... first off, I want to say where does your drag name come from, and then how long have you been doing drag?
Oh, well, my drag name came from the name of my first cat. No, it's just based on clinical depression. And
is
so
it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have people who my favorites situations in drag are when people go on stage and announce me and get my name completely wrong.
And uncomfortable.
My favorite flub up is when people just straight up call me, "Welcome to the stage, clinical depression." Like, okay.
You're like, it's still true.
In one way or another. Yeah. Well, not to dive into it like right at the beginning of the podcast. Wow, come in hot. But yeah, clinical depression is something I do have. And mm-hmm. I know that drag is kind of a scene where a lot of people, it's a place where people frequently, not everybody, kind mm-hmm. of sometimes their vices come into play with that.
Right.
And I wanted to be a part of, I wanted to take this thing that I love and this so much fun for me, but I didn't want it to be an escape. So I wanted to have what I would want to escape from be mm-hmm. so blatantly front and center with the spotlight shining on it,
right.
that it's something that I can meld into something that does make me happy.
Oh, that's
so that
really
it's
cool.
Not when I take off drag, I'm having to be faced with reality. Like, it's there front and center the whole time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And if the number's horrible, then I warned them.
You're like, this is just me processing trauma on stage.
Yeah.
So,
and y'all are bearing witness to it. Y'all are complicit.
So how long have you been doing drag?
I've been doing it for, what? How long back was, early 2019. So that would be...
So 4 years, almost?
Yeah, like 4 years.
Wow. And you already won a reality TV show. Good for you.
Ooh, my God. That was a complete wild experience. And getting to slap that on the resume is lovely. It's one...
I always say it's nice that they have something to say when they introduce you now.
Yeah.
Which you're going to just be saying for the rest of your career.
Winner in Camp Wanakiki, clinical depression.
That is such a vibe.
Oh, my God. Listen, clinical depression is the true winner of every season, am I right?
Like I said, nobody does drag because they have their stuff together.
For real. I think we talked about this for a brief second, but like when I see queens who have the money, have the mental health, mm-hmm. have the resources, I'm just like... I think you've evolved past the need for drag.
I honestly, like if this is really just your platform for art, like you are a painter, mm-hmm. There's a lot that comes with this craft that I'm like, you must really love it if you have your stuff together and you're still doing this.
Felt.
Because this is a business of having to deal with other people, and I do mean deal with, because there's people you love and there's people you care about, but really our business, especially for the entertainment side, is massive amounts of strangers.
Oh, yeah.
Constantly needing something from you.
We just came from a show. We learned a lot about a stranger.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That number. Oh, my goodness. Actually, you know, I don't actually mind talking about it. It's this. We were, because, like I said, we're at the Austin Drag Festival. Mm-hmm. And we went to a brunch hosted by Cheeky Cunt and Cupcake, I believe.
Featuring one of your fellow season four, Everything's About Me. Yes. Fellow season two finalists.
Yes.
Diana Fire
was in there. And then also Coco Bardot from Denver, Ricky Rose, and Nitrix Oxide was there. Mm-hmm. I think that's everybody. And I guess there is an annual number that Cupcake does.
It was foreshadowed throughout the entire show.
Yes, about this number that they've been doing for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh my God, this must be life-changing. It was. And pretty much, and I am going to ruin this for you all, because not everybody's going to get to see this number. I am going to ruin it. But basically, during halfway through the number, the Easter, because it's Easter as mm-hmm. we're filming.
To a children's choir.
To a children's choir.
About Jesus.
And she bent over and she pooped out a plastic egg into a basket.
And coming from...
I don't even know where we go from there.
Oh my God, coming from Columbus, Ohio, if someone did that in a bar, I'm pretty sure the place would be shut down. So when it first happened, my first thought was, oh my God, she's having a wardrobe malfunction. I feel so bad. But then as soon as it like settled in that this was purposeful, I was like, oh no.
I was like, oh no.
Oh my God.
My face was,
I love drag.
But my face was, the thing is, I actually do like a lot of weird drag, but this was the first time ever in my years of exploring and going to drag shows where my mouth was open wide. I was like, oh wow, because it wasn't, and let me paint this picture real quickly here for you listeners. She was ass facing the audience. Mm-hmm. This wasn't her turning around and then you saw the egg fall like it was an illusion. She put her ass towards the audience and she pooped out an egg into a basket for all of us to see at a brunch.
Not a brunch. I was like, oh, and the next entertainer was out there performing and I was like, I'm so sorry, I can't focus on you. There are poop particles in the air.
I felt the same way. Like Cheeky performed right after them and my mouth was just open. I was just like...
What, again, it should have been closed. The particles. The poop particles.
I was so... And the funny thing is, like, it's not even about whether that's good or bad art for me. I was just so severely shocked. I was stunned. And my mouth was open, and I was just like, geez, did that just happen?
It's numbers like that. Like, my drag is very much like, I want to give the gays in the audience something to talk about at brunch tomorrow, so I'm always trying to do something very visually wild. I don't think I can quite reach that level of what we saw.
Possible for me.
I just, if people are talking about it and laughing and giggling and just bringing it up in their podcasts and we're hee-hee-hawing over it, I think it did its job.
Yeah, because now it's going to be the talk of my town for at least a month, and to my therapist. So, Yeah, so, okay, so that was a shared trauma that we got to share with all of you.
Have we shared any other traumas?
Actually, this podcast is literally just me just like sharing about trauma, as in the first part that you were listening to, that you were absolutely listening to. So let's get into you kind of talked about why you started drag a little bit and about why you kind of chose your name, but like, what was appealing about drag to you to want you to get started with it?
Oh, okay. So what really got me into drag is, as a non-binary individual, there are so many ways to be non-binary. There's not just one. So for me specifically, I kind of align more with the agender ideology, being that I'm not a man or a woman, and I never am at any point, regardless of how I look. And that's kind of a mental hurdle of being like, reminding yourself that, oh, it doesn't matter how I look when I look in the mirror, I am still an agender individual, because there's really no manual for how to dress in your everyday life to look agender. So I don't really like using this term because it kind of implies that you're coming off as something you're not, but I'm going to use the term passing for a moment. But like if I were to walk down the street, no matter how I'm dressed, no one's going to look at me, like no everyday person's going to look at me and be like, that is a agender individual that uses they, them pronouns. They are not a man or a woman. The closest I'll get is that a man or a woman? And so drag gave me this venue to dress up however I wanted, and gender doesn't really come into question in the same way that it does in my everyday life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
At the end of the day, it's just I made people laugh, and it didn't really matter. It doesn't really matter, like, who or what I am. It's all about the experience that you bring to the stage. And
No, I was going to say, I think of that, when you're saying that, I think about that as bearded drag artists, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a bearded drag artist who does hyper femme. It does kind of, like, it's not, it's, like, I always feel like sometimes it, like, negates bearded drag when we talk about gender fuck a little bit. Because there are some people that do gender fuck drag where they are, like, fucking apart gender in all the right, like, right ways that they want to do with their art. And just sometimes somebody is just a bearded person who does drag, and it's not about gender fuck. Like, so they'll do hyper femme, right, but they just have a beard.
Yeah.
And like, and I think of that in that way, to where the presentation about what I'm being given in a performance by an entertainer is how I should receive it.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
If they're saying that, like, if the song is like, I am a boy, like they're doing like Beyonce's I Am a Boy, and they are doing societal norms of boys, then I should just be thinking this person is a boy, right? Like,
yeah.
Whatever the performance is telling me is how I'm supposed to receive it. So I kind of really appreciate your description about saying, like, you know, I'm just, I use drag as this medium to do this and to make people laugh and to be this in this moment for these people for this performance. And I love that.
Yeah. One of my best friends, who is actually my housemate right now and helped actually sew two of my outfits for Camp Wanakiki, Calamity Adams, who is also a bearded drag queen, she describes it really, really well, that doing drag kind of boils down costume and presentation to being just that. It's just a costume, and it doesn't have to, like, trick your brain into believing that you're one thing or another. And at the end of the day, it is just clothes on your body. And your body is and who you are is what defines you, and not any of that. I guess to loop it all around, like, drag helps make the way we all look kind of mean. Wow, hold on. No, oh my God. Calamity sums it up so much better. Oh my God. But it's just this notion that clothes are clothes. And
right.
We define ourselves, really.
Yeah, I know. The thing about RuPaul's quote about you're born naked and the rest
that's exactly what Calamity says when she's describing it. She says, like, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's so incredibly true.
It is true, because my definition for drag is gender and artistry coming together, is what I call it. Because it's like we play dress up in whatever gender we so choose, or whatever presentation we want to choose, or any non-gender we want to do. And I think that that's beautiful. And it really is just clothes, because even like a costume is clothes, and like however you want to do that. And I know that some artists obviously have the absence of clothing, sure, but like it's one
we
of those
saw it.
Yeah, yes I did. Oh my goodness, I saw that. And so for me, so that's how I describe it. And I also, that's why, like, when we talk about like the trans ban, that's really what it is, the drag ban.
Yeah.
It's like kids play dress up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In my interview that I had with Coleslaw, we talked about kids play dress up at Halloween.
Yeah.
What's the difference at a drag show? It's just an adult playing dress up with whatever they want to be in them. They want to be a space alien, or a 1950s housewife, or a dragon. Like, why? What's so wrong with that? What's so scary about that? What's so sexual about that?
The bending over backwards to target trans people is absolutely unreal in this country, because you know they want to embolden people to point at people on the street that they can perceive as trans under the guise that, oh, that's a drag entertainer in public, and they want that to be illegalized so that trans people could just be attacked on the spot.
It's true.
It's absolutely nuts. The mantra of drag is not a crime is, like, wonderful and great, but, like, we also have to recognize that, like, the true target is trans people.
It really is. And it what really sucks about, and I said this before in an earlier episode, like, they came for the wrong group. Drag artists are at the forefront of every movement, and it's absolutely stupid that they thought that that was going to be their way in, because every drag artist in the world has a platform. Even if you only have one fan on Instagram with your drag name because you just started yesterday, that person has a platform, all the way up into, you know, RuPaul, who has millions, right? You attack the wrong group of people. Not every trans person who's walking down the street has a platform. Every drag artist has a platform. Mm-hmm. It came for the wrong group.
Oh, God, yeah. We're unhinged. We will shit out eggs at a drag brunch at 3 o'clock.
Oh, God. God, well, 2:54.
Yeah, that person's your enemy now. You went and did that.
You did. That person is shitting out a plastic egg that did not break inside of them.
Oh, my God. That's what this podcast is about. I believe, like, she tried to do it again, and it didn't come out, and then announced on the mic at the end, the other one's still up there.
Yeah, I was mortified. And hopefully it's not one of those things of where they're going to have to go to a doctor, because that's immediately what I thought. They're like, if it's stuck up there, well, then there you go.
Gotta check if Jesus is still in the tomb.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Ew!
That's so horrifying. So, switching gears to your time on Camp Wanakiki season 4, let's start with, what were you doing? Where were you at when you got the call?
Our season actually got an email, and so...
This is already great. My season got an email, actually.
I can refer to that. So, I got the call when... So, I had gotten the call, actually, a day after me and my partner now of 2 years made it official that we were going to be them friend and boyfriend. Mm. I'm the them friend. So...
That's awesome.
The entire first part of our relationship was, hi, can you help me now make these costumes and wait on me while I'm gone for 2 weeks and then not bother me for another month while I recover?
Yeah.
And then have me talk about this show for the next 2 consecutive years nonstop.
Yeah.
So shout out to Tyler for having to endure all of that, as well as Calamity, who was living with me and had to endure all that.
Oh, I bet.
It was absolutely incredible, and...
Were you a fan of the show before?
Yes, I was. I would literally sit and watch them in my room all the time and write... I am a maniac. I will write down on a spreadsheet what I would have done for every season if I had judged it myself. Oh, wow. And so I... everything is on Excel. It's absolutely unhinged, and... it is out there in the world, and wow. I would just like sit there and talk about with anyone else who's in the room in the vicinity. I just love the show. I love the, especially that there's emphasis on the voiceovers and having a story, and that's something that I love so incredibly much, because I feel like a lot of other shows will overlook that and kind of focus more on how much money you've spent on an outfit and what's more grandiose, and it tends to come from like the same designers. I am talking about Drag Race.
Yeah, of course. No, and I appreciate that too. And one thing that's really cool about the show is that they have it to where we don't eliminate each other, technically, like the sugar bakers decide, you know. So
those
those assholes. So we don't really, so it can help with like our camaraderie as campers that we're not actually eliminating each other. Right, which is cool, and I love that part. But the thing that is really interesting, that kind of how the way you're talking about it, is the show is positive. Like, the show is just more positive than Drag Race and Dragula, like, because it's about campy, comedic nature, and, like, so the things that we do. Actually, let me say it in this way. Let me ask this question. The character that you portrayed on the show... you know, for, like, daily activities and whatever, because it's almost like we're filming a TV show.
Yeah.
How closely related is to that person being you?
I would say the character I portrayed in the show is probably the most accurate to who I am out of drag. Because the character of Clinica kind of changes by the daily. So if I'm going to a show and I'm having a lot of fun... I will just go around as if I have an IQ of the same amount of letters in my name. and that's just, like, fun to me. Or I could just, I don't know, I try to interpret silliness in just, like, a different way. I don't know. Whatever's going through my mind in that day, that it amps up to 11 in drag. And then when I was there at camp, I I got a little intimidated, and I was like, I don't know how long I can keep a character up for, because what if they catch me when I'm, like, I don't know, I care about continuity, and so I thought it would be easiest to just be myself, so that I don't have to, like, turn on and off constantly, so I would just always be on.
Yeah, it, so mine was obviously 100% a character I created, and the sucky thing about it is I don't even think I knew who the character was until, like, episode 3.
Yeah!
Because I was, like, because I was watching it season 1, because I didn't have enough history of the show to go on, and so I was like, okay, so I need to act like an idiot. All right, that's fine. I can do that.
They do love when you, they do love that.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, crap. I was like, how can I make my personality come through with acting like an idiot? And I was like, I don't know if that's, that was really challenging. Like, so what I did was I leaned into the things that I have as traits, like being the black girl, which is a lot of my drag. And then I leaned into the, like the fact that I do love to eat all the time. And I leaned into just being happy for no reason, mm-hmm. which is, I believe, because for me, that's called the professionalism side of my drag.
Yeah.
Like, the assignment was to be energetic and have a campy can-do attitude. So my professionalism dictated, okay, I was like, so then I'm going to do that. And it seemed to work out for me because I made it all the way through.
Oh, no. Definitely coming into the show, I was getting the vibe where it's like, okay, we're all, like, legitimate campers. We're like kids.
We're kids.
And so yeah. I'm going to go into this with the energy of, I don't know, a dog that keeps wanting to eat the pavement gravel.
The pavement gravel.
Me 10 seconds ago, I don't do a character.
So the question I've asked every camper that's been on here is, so for your DDF, which is, listeners, once again, that is your daily drag face. For those of you out there who are a little disillusioned by this, yes, we do have to actually put on that makeup every single time mm-hmm. that we do drag, or if we had to do reshoots, if you did your nighttime run talent show look and then you had to do reshoots, you would have to get back in it. So how'd you come up with your DDF?
It's funny enough, it was based on a concept that I never executed. So, let me explain. So when I started drag, I came in, one of my biggest insecurities going into drag, or really just going in anywhere, is that I feel that, like, oh, I'm annoying, I talk too much, I'm loud, I'm obnoxious. And so drag was going to be a place where I could present entertainment without actually having to talk to people. And so I was going to, my concept when I started drag was I was going to be a drag mime that never spoke. And I would just, my only speaking would be the lip syncing I do on stage. And then people would come up and be like, that's great. And I would commit to not speaking. That didn't happen because, again, I would have to do that on and off switch, and the urge to talk was simply too much. So I never actually ended up doing that. But then I stuck with keeping just wearing the mime style, and I like it. And I'm not good at fashion, so I just stick with black and white because it's easy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Black and white is easy. So how long did your daily drag face take you?
My makeup has kind of evolved a lot since the show, and I would say that my daily drag makeup took about 30 minutes to put on. But my makeup coach, who is also Calamity Adams, my housemate and designer and I designed the looks, but put together two of the looks for the show. Wow, the train just derailed. Yeah. What was I saying?
Yeah, so I was saying, how long did it take you to get into your DDF?
Oh, just about 30 minutes.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially because you were starting to say your makeup has evolved since then.
Yeah, I've started to take my time more, and I think it's started to pay off a lot more. There are some shots where they take on that first day where they say, this is the first Polaroid that's going to come out and show who you are. Oof!
Yeah.
Oof!
Yeah, mine. They loved my thing on the show. As I kept saying, I was like, why do you keep taking me from down angles? I was like, do you need to show every available chin I have and didn't realize I have? Because good Lord, every time they're like, Coco, go sit on this top bunk. I was like, where will you be? Will you also be up here on this top bunk?
And like, on the roof, cut a hole.
I was like, yeah. I was like, no, we'll just be on the ground. I was like, so you want to shoot the fat bitch from the floor. Okay, Jesus. That's fine. So he's just like, good Lord, this is stupid.
Right. I can't rag on them too much. I painted the way I did, and so there has to be some accountability.
Blame it on the edit. How do you feel like you were edited on this show in the sense of, like, because I know that, like, most of the things that they, because remember, the filming hours are, like, 15-hour days, and, you know, to cut down for an hour. How do you feel like your shots came through? How do you feel like you were, do you feel like you were represented well?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I absolutely got represented the way I wanted to and more. And one of the big things I wanted to do coming into the competition was to talk about navigating the drag scene as an autistic individual, because that's been kind of a topic of conversation throughout my drag career, of having to explain to people, like, oh, this is why I'm not making eye contact right now. This is why I'm kind of resistant to hugs right now. This is why I need to step outside right now. This is why I'm, like, looking the way I do when the music's blasting right now. It's not what's playing. It's the decibels of what's blasting me right now. So I appreciated that I got to showcase that on the show. And everyone else in my season will know that I talked about it nonstop when the camera was on me, because I was dedicated to getting that message out there. So I'm glad that it landed when it did.
That's great. Yeah. I feel like a lot of us had, actually for any reality TV show, I feel like it's one of those things of where you want a certain message to get out there. So you have to talk about it consistently, mm-hmm. because they will, it's 15 hour filming days. They're going to edit things out.
Oh, like, yeah. Right?
So I totally get that.
I was also convinced that I was going home. Like, when I was packing and getting ready for the show, I was convinced that I was going to go home early. Like, that was like the game plan was I was going to go there, spread my message, get to meet a lot of people who kind of share similar mindsets of drag, of being mm-hmm. ridiculous and fun, right. make those connections, and then dip when I dipped.
Yeah, I actually was, when I got the call, I just thought of it as a marketing opportunity for my drag. Mm-hmm. Competition makes me incredibly uncomfortable, which sounds weird.
Oh my God.
So, I lean into new experiences because I think new experiences are healthy. And so when I went, I also had the mindset, I just didn't want to go home first for humiliation purposes. Not saying people who go home first should ever feel humiliated, but it just was a lot of time and preparation, and going home first would have made me feel like a failure mm-hmm. to myself. Cause I take defeat really hard as well. It's stuff I've dealt with my whole life. So like when I went, I really was like, well, as long as I don't go home first, second is even fine. I'm okay with that. But by the third episode, I started feeling like, I'm going to try to go farther. I actually made a promise to myself. This is going to sound so stupid. I said I would shave off half my brow to make it easier to get ready in the morning if I made it past the first episode. So even if I went home on the second episode and had a half-shaved brow, it was just so I could just get ready a lot faster. And honestly, and I was there till the end. So I was like, okay, cool. This is great.
Oh my gosh. sorry, NDA. My partner knew immediately how I placed or how far I made it when I got back home. Not because I said anything to him, but I told him when I left that if I had made it to the finale for the final gag of the season, I was going to shave my head. And if I had not made it to the finale, and if I got eliminated beforehand, I would have been like, I'm not shaving my head for nothing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I was like, depending on the status of my hair would be the indicator of what happened. So when I got back, he's like,
oh,
well, I see you did well.
I see you did super well. So did they film all of you winning then?
Yes, they did.
Okay. So you, did you...
Except for Hillary, because they can't give her the money in Canada anyway. Oh. I'm kidding. That's a lie. There's no Hamburger Marys up there, so they skipped her. I'm kidding.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny. Let's talk about the finale day, because it's always great when we talk to people who made it there. When it aired. So where were you? How were you feeling? Did you watch it early? Did you wait to review it? Let's talk about that.
The way I actually found out is that I was given an invitation to come and help out with a cameo for season 5, which I'm not going to disclose any information for, but I know it's going to be an incredible season. Y'all are not ready. But when I got there, they surprised me, and that's how I found out that I won. And it was through a really cute method, which I can't go into much details about because it does spoil some stuff. But it was such a cute moment, and the whole camera crew was there. Ruthie was there.
Oh.
It was good cameras, too. Is that out TV budget money? That was the first thing I did when I got there. I was like, where... how many more speakers do we have now? How many more mic packs do we have now? Where's the budget going? And they had these really cute little sound squares that I recognize because in college I used to do sound design. And I was like, oh, great. This is the good stuff. The good and you stuff. Just have to clip it right on their lapels and that's it.
Oh, that's so nice. Oh, it's
wonderful. So, and there was like 8 of them. So I was like, yes.
That's exciting. That is cool. Yeah. It is cool that Camp Wanakiki is now on Out TV. Mm-hmm. And because they have all the seasons there as well. So I also, when I introduce myself now, I say it's Camp Wanakiki Out TV, which is cool. So then how far was that before the finale that you learned that then?
That was about 3 episodes before the actual finale aired. Oh, so wow. I had to sit on that for a good, which, ooh. Oh, this might be how Hillary and Deja are finding out that I knew beforehand. Hi, y'all. but yeah, at the actual finale that we had in my city, which we planned to have our finale watch party in Columbus way before I remotely knew. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I did have to sit in that theater and pretend to be surprised that I won.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I tricked Hillary or Deja. I don't know. I'm a really bad liar. Yeah. They may have seen through it. I don't know. But Hillary and I have a live reaction on her YouTube page of us seeing who the winner is before we went to go watch in the theater because mm-hmm. we wanted to have that authentic moment, which I had to pretend was an authentic moment.
Oh my gosh. This tea so is we delicious. Filmed that
just to get her authentic reaction to losing.
Oh, that is fantastic. Oh my
God. I love her. I'm glad that we did that, but I did lie to her face.
Yeah, you did. Absolutely. And the thing is, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that too, because because that moment is also really important for them as mm-hmm. well. Like, because you don't want people showing up for a viewing party and being, dejected looking, right?
Like, oh yeah, like, I would never tell.
Well, because it's also horrible. Well, because it's also for the fans too. Like, yeah, who were in the space at the time. Was there a lot of people there?
Oh yeah, it was a really fun turnout. It warmed my heart very much. Columbus is the Columbus can be sometimes a bit of a divisive community in terms mm. of what kind of drag is celebrated.
Sure.
And I was very thoroughly surprised. I had a really wonderful time, and a lot of my friends who I care very much about were all there.
Oh,
and
that's that fantastic.
Made me very happy.
No, that's really great. Yeah, because like we talked about before, drag is playing pretend, right? And so part of the playing pretend is also, even if you're kind of going through things and you're not processing it through the number that you're doing, it's for the fans to just enjoy this experience, especially if like they paid a cover or, you know, in that relationship we have at the bar, like it's just like everybody having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really cool that you did that. A couple more questions I have about the show. So what was your favorite look?
Oh, in general or mine?
Your favorite. Okay, looks.
I have an answer for general and mine.
Okay.
My favorite look was getting to do. It's a tie between my outer space alien look, because going into the show, I knew, being a non-binary person, we're always associated with frogs and aliens, and so. So I wanted to lean into having some kind of like alien representation with a non-binary look as soon as I saw that Pride was an option. And every single one of my looks, I wanted to incorporate a reveal. So I thought, what is the most iconic alien reveal in cinematic history? Alien. And so I weave those together, and it was so much fun to piece together. But I think my absolute favorite that might edge it out was the tractor. That was a lot. Especially since that look, a little bit of tea. So we were told what all the runways were, and then a little bit later in the process of preparation, we were told what the final runway was a Barnyard Social, and I think there was some kind of deliberation over whether they wanted to have it. So that was the one that we all, as a cast, had the least amount of preparation for, and coming up. So I'm just very proud that that one came together in the time that it did.
That's really, that's cool.
It is like falling apart, though.
Oh, I bet they.
Because it's made of paper mache. So what I'm going to do is at some point have a tractor funeral drag show where everyone just does their country numbers. And then I want to come out at the end, mm-hmm. like, very dramatic lighting, and just walk my way out the curtain with the same kind of...
Sorry. No, you're good. It's all good.
So I want to walk out the curtain and just be my tractor look, but like mm-hmm. old and grizzled and like coughing and wheezing with like the engine spurting and like looking as like completely banged up as it currently is, and just do one final ballad and then just collapse and then have everyone come on stage and beat me like a pinata.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's actually in-depth, and I actually love that idea.
Yeah. Do you? I'm going to invite Lily since she went home on that episode, and I think she'd find it cathartic.
Oh, man. Diana used to do this mix because she was in the top, like, the whole season, right? And so she did this mix where she wore all her looks from the show, and then she would mix in the words where they were like, Diana, you did so great. This person's the winner. Diana, you did so great. That person's the winner. Diana did so great. That person's the winner. And she just acted out all the scenes, and she was so upset by it. It was so funny. Oh my gosh. You still have your camp shirts?
My camp shirt? Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of people from my season use them in numbers where they cut them up or burn them.
I'm very realistic about the turnout of the season, and like Hillary and I have talked about this, and there's a degree to which we're like, dang, we really just kind of got 90% of the accolades that season offered. Like it was like, like it was wild that in our season, and I mean reality shows exist. I think it's completely reasonable to disagree with judging. I think that's part of the fun of watching a reality show. And even from my own season, there's so many times where there are people that appeared in the top only once or were never in the top that I think should have been on occasion. Because from our season, there were only 3 prize winners. Wow. It was just me, Coleslaw, and Hillary. We were the only 3 people that won challenges that in our season. Something? Yeah.
Wow.
Other than Pola, who won Congeniality, we were the only 3 that won prize money throughout the entire season.
Wow, I didn't even... Wow, yeah, I guess that's... Wow.
And Deja was in the top, but they didn't give her a win. I was gooped. I'm not gonna lie. I was gooped when Deja did not win that comedy challenge.
Yeah, wow.
Hillary absolutely deserved to be top. What's wonderful. But Deja, gooped.
Wow. And when you break it down like that, that does feel a little... It feels a little weird, actually. But I know, like, I get with the judging. Like even with the... There was this thing on Drag Race about the double, what somebody thought should be a double Chanté in this last season. And I didn't agree with that decision, but most people were like, oh no, it should have been. And that is the fun. You're right. Because it is technically supposed to still just be fun. Yes, it's our art and it helps raise our platforms and it is a competition for us to get potentially some money and some bookings. But it is still TV. Like,
yeah.
I try to tell people like reality TV is incredibly fake.
Yeah.
Not in the sense of, and I will, let me reiterate this point because I did not do this in my interview with Coleslaw. The challenges are not rigged for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that you still have to show up in your looks. They still judge you. You don't know who's going to win the challenge. It's not like they are like filming the entire episode and the stuff that we say. Like, it's not rigged in that way. It's not scripted in that way. It's not really actually scripted at all. They just tell you what you're going to do and then you just act like an idiot. And then that's how it works. And so I just want people to understand, like, the wins that people get are because the judges thought the presentation is X, Y, and Z. And sure, they could probably eliminate a person because they didn't like what they were doing, like, in the sense of the entertainment value that they had. That's up to them. But everything that you see is real in that capacity.
Mm-hmm. Hillary and I were talking about how going into the season, a lot of our looks kind of were character after character after character. We were almost never consistently ourselves on the runways. And I think that we kind of, by the end of the season, figured, they like that. They really like when you're not yourself. Wow, that's not a right way to put it. But I don't know. They really like when you're being a character and just really showing versatility in that regard. Not to say that no one else in my season did. Everyone did. But it's... Hillary leaned especially hard into it with her voices, because she almost never had the same voice in all of her runways, think that was probably one of her biggest strengths.
You know, I can see that, but the other thing, too, is, like, and I like to compare this part to Drag Race, and even Dragula, too, every season of a show has to change in the sense of what they're looking for. So with Camp Wanakiki, if you haven't figured it out by now, a lot of the badges are the same. There's usually like one different one, but they're mostly the same badges from season to season. And like, and so that means people can technically prepare for it if they get on the show, but that means the recipe would be the same kind of person would win every time. They have to change up the judging for what you're being presented, because otherwise you would have the exact same person winning every single time.
They do switch up water sports in terms of what they're looking for, because first two seasons it was, the prompt was water sports, but mm-hmm. in season three, I'm such a fan, in season three the prompt was day on the beach, and on season four it was under the sea. But Camp Spirit and Daily and Camp Spirit and your signature campy drag and finale are all the same.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, like, it just makes it interesting to see. Well, because the thing is with camp, and actually I will say this, like, what the Sugar Bakers are looking for in the sense of the camp, it has to be, it's really what they want for that mm-hmm. season, what they're trying to show and showcase that season, and what, like, vibes with them and whatever. And I don't think that they know the winner from the second that we all show up. I think that they just, like, I could write a thesis on what I think mm-hmm. that they think about this show, about what they want and how they want it to feed, and how people act and respond, and how they think fans will act and respond as well, because it all goes into that judging. Like, the daily camp activities just help them understand our personalities and who we are. Mm-hmm. I don't really think they help with the judging, but it does understand, like, I think I like this person to be on the show a little bit longer if they present a good talent show.
Mm.
But that's also that's also what's fun about the show too. It's like recognizing, like, oh, I bet this person's gonna be here a while, because they are just, like, they're really fun to watch. They did great in the camp activities or talent shows, or, you know, less than poor. So I mean, mm-hmm. better than poor. So they're probably gonna be here a while, and I think that's fun.
Yeah, they're also in a really, really hard position of having to objectively judge campy drag, because camp drag is very. I don't know. I think it's very defined by the experience and the feelings that it brings to an audience, as opposed to, like, how being visually camp, because there's so many, like, you can look, I think we have this mindset that camp is, like, you look like a clown, right, or you're wearing, like, a big silly costume, and, like, you can look in any certain way and then bring a performance that's, like, pure unadulterated camp. We witnessed one.
Gonna bring it, like, back to the egg.
Like, I think Yolda Wabbit is also an amazing example of mm-hmm. an entertainer who's bringing, like, absolute, like, cabaret glamour, but the content of what she's bringing on stage and the ideas and the presentation are right up the alley of what I think the show's mission statement is.
Yeah, I think so too. And yes, you're right about the they have to, like, drag is already just so different, and camp has so many layers about mm-hmm. what it could be. And so I agree with your point fully. And then also with that is, I think about, they try to also sometimes to do about how well executed the stupid thing that you're presenting to them is, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're like, I'm going to be a box, and, like, you just wear a box around yourself, that's not cool. But, like, if you're like, I'm going to be a box, and then, like, you have, like, box cutter, like, you make a box cutter hand, and, like, mm-hmm. do this, like, and, like, all this, and, like, boxes a bow, and, like, you know, all this stuff out of cardboard, and then you elevate, and then, like, because that's what they mean by amp up your camp. It's like, yeah, you can wear a box, and that's campy, and you can do wheels in the bus, like, that's great. But if you elevate and amp up your camp and do X, Y, and Z, then that's what makes it win. And I like that about the show, too, about how the show really is for creatives, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool. Because, like, Drag Race does have those elements, and Dragula certainly has those elements. But when you have the broad spectrum of camp, it's like that creativity almost, like, has no limits. Because, like, if it's too foolish, like, RuPaul would be like, oh, I don't like this, it just looks messy. Mm-hmm. But in Camp on a Kiki, it could be like, oh my gosh, this is really creative that you added X, Y, and Z to this. So I really appreciate the show for that reason.
Oh, yeah. I feel that, and Hillary and I actually had a conversation about this after the water sports challenge, because mm-hmm. we were discussing, and Hillary was saying that on paper, other drag shows might not have chosen her to be the winner of that challenge. They might have said, oh, that's a t-shirt, oh, that's sloppy, oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But at the end of the day, it's the character, it's the feeling that it brings to who's watching. Mm-hmm. And I think that drag on other TV shows has started to become a little bit unattainable. And
it feels unattainable, doesn't it?
It doesn't feel like something I would walk into an actual drag show and see.
It doesn't even feel like... I have been to large local drag shows that have budgets, great payouts, that are even weekly, that I wouldn't see the stuff I see on Drag Race or even Dragula sometimes. Like, in those spaces where they're, even if you have like a crowd of 300 people, I'm not always seeing that. Like, and it, and I don't know if that makes me sad or if that makes me feel like Drag Race is, and Dragula potentially, are redefining too much about what drag should be in the mainstream. Because guess what? Like we're all just playing dress up, right? Mm-hmm. But I, taking out a small loan to get on Drag Race for a $10,000 package or even up to $20,000 package for all your looks on the show for stuff that's just out of reach for an $100 bar booking. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's disappointing a little bit. I really wish that people would understand a little bit more that that drag is not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't.
Yeah. I also, I see very lately that a lot of drag are, a lot of drag is kind of referencing, I've seen this a bit on Drag Race. I can't name it off the top of my head because I'm a Wanakiki fan, not a Drag Race fan. Well, no, I do love Drag Race. Any Drag Race person watching this, hi, watching. I don't know. I like the notion that we as queer people create content that those outside the queer community are trying to emulate, and that we're setting the trends. And I feel that as Drag Race is going further and further along, I'm seeing more of us as a queer community trying to emulate things that didn't come from us. And I don't know, that's a bold opinion to have, but I like the notion of, nope, train derailed. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, because if you think about it, like for like lip sync battle, like that is directly related to something that drag artists have been doing since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, lip syncing is not completely a queer art form, of course. But it's like, it's exactly what a drag show is. Like that production value and all the other stuff is that's exactly what a drag show is. And I think that there is room for all of it. But as bold as the statement I'm about to make is, I think our audiences, I have been saying to my audiences over the last couple of years, I want to refine the palette of the drag that we enjoy, because if we just are focusing on that platform, even though we've been on a platform, sure, like, you also don't want to necessarily have to just, like, as a black girl, like, I don't necessarily always just want to have to be bucketing into World of Beyonce. Sometimes I want to do a ballad or a camp number or these things, and they should all be tipped just as well and celebrated just as much.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was trying to get at.
Understood. And I think that on the note of, like, audience expectations, Drag Race has created this environment where some people might go into a drag show and be like, oh, I'm not impressed because this is not what I see on TV. And even Drag Race girls who are performing, people might be like, oh, you're repeating outfits. And it's like, what do you want from them? My God, you want everyone to go broke?
Yeah,
which seriously is so disappointing that, like, now success in drag is really now feels like it's only guaranteed for those who already have money.
Right.
Which I feel like defeats the purpose of drag.
Oh, yeah, because nobody who starts drag usually has money. Like, the majority of us don't. Like, because it's such an expensive hobby, even if you're doing it on the cheap end. Like, because makeup costs money. Even if you get it all from the dollar store, it still costs money. The Uber to the gigs, the clothes on your back, you know, your drink and food at the bar. Like, all of this stuff costs money. And if you do drag often, it just keeps costing more and more money. And so it's just, it's one of those things of, like, if you're really expecting, because, like, yeah, those Drag Race girls do not bring those outfits. You want to know why? Because they only get 2 checked bags with Southwest. Like,
Southwest?
Sorry. This podcast was sponsored by Southwest.com. No,
not anymore. Breach of contract.
Yeah, breach of contract. But, yeah, no, it's just one of those things of where, as we grow with drag, I really wish that it would... our audiences would also just grow with us. I'm not calling our audiences incompetent. I'm not calling.
I am. Fuck them. Y'all. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, audiences, you need to grow up a little bit. I'm just wanting them to refine their palates just a little bit, and then understanding that there's just different tastes that they can have.
And at the end of the day, if we adhered to what those audiences wanted, then they would just be watching the same number consecutively over and over again. Everyone wearing the same stuff. Don't you want variety in your shows? Yeah. And this goes for, like, local queens that kind of try to make lineups that are very similar to the kind of drag that they want. Because it's like, well, think of it this way. queens that keep having these expectations for what everyone needs to look like in drag. Mm-hmm. If everyone did drag like you, what if they do it better than you? Suddenly you're out of a job.
Oh, wow. I never actually thought about it that way. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point,
Keep your job security. Do drag your way.
Yeah. No, wow. That's a really good... You know, normally in an episode, I try to actually think of a good title to actually name the episode. I think there's something around that. Yeah, because if everybody's doing the same thing, then, you know, somebody might end up being better than you.
Yeah. Ooh,
that's good. That's really good. That's
scary.
So, as we get to the end of the episode, I know we talked a lot about other things. Maybe we'll have to do a part two episode with Clinica in the future. So, if you were to get into a bar fight, which two of your Camp Wanakiki siblings from your season would you want to add to help you win the fight?
The Sugar Baker twins, so I go out them to get and watch them get their asses kicked. I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. Don't put that in there. I'm kidding. Okay, this is an easy answer. Paula Frost, because she can channel the bear from The Revenant like no one's business. And she has expressed many times whenever there's been even like remote drama online with anyone in the cast, she's like, I will go Mama Bear on them. And I believe her. Because those foam wigs she makes are absolutely fantastic. It's a Paula. You should reach out to her and check them out. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. You have to have some like unbelievable degrees of patience to order to do that, and people who have lots of patience can release that in one solid go, and I think Paula could punch someone's head off if she so felt inclined to do so. And I would absolutely pick Vincent as individuals underneath the trans umbrella in 2023. There is rage in our hearts, and all he needs is a reason. Vincent and Paula, they clear.
Oh, that's funny. That's great answers. Great answers. So, tell all the kids your social medias.
Hi, you can find me, Clinica Depressus, on at Clinica Depressus and Instagram, Clinica D on Facebook, because they don't recognize Clinica Depressus. They think that's a fake name on Facebook. So
I wonder why.
I don't know. Bezos, Elon Musk, who's in charge of Facebook?
I don't know. The Zuckerbergs?
Zuckerberg? Fuck you, Zuckerberg. So it's Clinica D, D-E-E. Mm-hmm. And on Twitter, you can just see Depressus. That's where I talk shit.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna have to follow Twitter. So I'm going to post all of Clinica's social medias and pictures of Clinica on our website. I just usually just steal photos. I literally type in the first one. That's the one.
My nudes.
Welcome everybody. Hello. To Clinica's nudes. Wow.
Sorry. This is the drop. Hi. Times are rough.
Times are rough. Oh my goodness. God. So
I can't wait to go back home and shit in a basket.
Ain't that the tea?
Happy Easter. Oh my
God. Happy Easter, everybody. Happy Easter indeed. So thank you everybody for listening. You can see all of this information, not the video of that egg pooping thing.
I'll post it. We just told you our socials. It'll be there.
It'll be there somewhere. www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. Say goodbye to the children, Clinica.
Bye, children.
Bye-bye. Bye. Hi everybody, this has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.